The Human Podcast features weekly service audio from the Unitarian Universalist Metro Atlanta North Congregation of Roswell, Georgia. Please visit us at human.org.
Hello and good morning. I am Bruce Langston, a member of this congregation since 1996, and humbled and happy to be your worship associate this morning. On behalf of our lay service leader, Chris Wilson, who joined Human during the pandemic, and music director Alex Peach, I welcome you to the Unitarian Universalist Metro Atlanta North Congregation, a church home we affectionately call Human. Our minister, the Reverend Dave Dunn, is away doing good deeds elsewhere in nearby communities and will return, as of now, for our in-gathering service tentatively scheduled for August 8th. Our current plan also includes beginning a simulcast of our Sunday services via YouTube on that date. A liberal religious community, Human is a member congregation of the Unitarian Universalist Association. Our open-minded, open-hearted spiritual communities help people lead lives of justice, love, learning, and hope. And our faith and values are exhibited in our seven principles. Human's mission is to nurture our spirit, strive for justice, and transform the world. And Human's vision is to be a vital and visible community for all, bravely working toward the day when social, economic, and environmental justice is a reality. Whoever you are, wherever you're from, whomever you love, and wherever you are on your life or spiritual journey, you are welcome here, and we're glad you're with us. We look forward to getting to know you. We invite you to join us after the service at 10:45 this morning for our virtual coffee hour on Google Meet. Bring your own coffee for a friendly conversation. For the meeting link, go to the Human homepage at human.org. Click the calendar link in the upper right corner. It should be right at the top of the list. For more information on upcoming events, click the upcoming events link at human.org. And now, a few words about our service today. UU Power. Chris Wilson, who joined Human with his spouse Denise and son Todd about a year ago, volunteered to lead a service, and we're delighted to have him today. His original idea for today was to compare the philosophy of Yoda, wise mentor of the Star Wars movie franchise, to Ralph Waldo Emerson, transcendentalist and son of a Unitarian minister. I'm interested to see how it turns out. Now, take a moment to quiet yourself. Take a deep breath and clear your mind. Be here now in this virtual space with each other and prepare for our service.
I'm Laura Keck from Human's membership team. If you're new to our community, I'd like to take this opportunity to personally welcome you. Please take a moment to visit our website at human.org. There on our homepage, you will find our online visitor form. After filling it out, someone from the membership committee will contact you. For more ways to connect, join us for coffee and conversation or adult religious exploration after service. You can also reach us at membership@human.org. We'd love to answer the questions you might have about Human, as well as to connect you with others who share your interests. We look forward to meeting with you.
Today's call to worship comes from the Creed of the Jedi, from templeofthejediorder.org. I am a Jedi, an instrument of peace. Where there is hatred, I shall bring love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. and where there is sadness, joy. I am a Jedi. I shall never seek so much to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love, for it is in giving that we receive, it is in pardoning that we are pardoned, and it is in dying that we're born to eternal life. The Force is with me always, for I am a Jedi.
Our chalice lighting today is read by our All Souls United class, which meets here at Yumen at 4 p.m. on Sundays. Our chalice lighting today reminds us of the seventh of our seven Unitarian Universalist principles, namely, the respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. This chalice lighting is by Michael DeVernon Boblett and is titled We Are Not Alone. Please join us in saying, "We are not alone," in between each verse. We are not alone. We are this flame, ancient as the stars, new as the vulnerable spark.
We are not alone.
We are this chalice, rimmed by the spiral dance of searching.
We are not alone. We are the light soaring, the shadow deepening, the dance between them.
We are not alone.
We are the heirs of the tribes and their fires, the healers and their circles.
We are not alone.
We are here. We are here for ourselves. We are here for each other.
And we are not alone.
Today's Wondering Time story comes from the Worship Web Library found at UUA.org. Amelia and Her Super Magical Powers by Gail Spar. This is the story of a young girl named Amelia. Amelia was fascinated by tales of people with superpowers like Wonder Woman or magic like Harry Potter. She yearned to have powers like that so she could help people. Like the boy she often saw sitting all alone at lunch, looking very sad. If I had magic powers, I could make him smile, she said to herself. Or like the little kids who were being picked on in the schoolyard by an older girl. Ooh, superpowers would straighten her out fast, she said. And whenever she walked past the old rundown park near her house, she imagined how magic powers could fix it up so kids would have a nice place to play. One night, just as Amelia was about to fall asleep, a fairy godmother came into her room. Hello, Amelia, she said. I'm here to help you. What have you been wishing for? Oh, said Amelia, please give me some super magic powers so I can make a difference. Well, said the fairy godmother, I'm happy to give you some magic, Amelia. But my, oh, thank you, cried Amelia. And with that, she went right to sleep. The next morning, when Amelia woke up, she remembered what had happened the night before. She jumped out of bed, eager to get going and test out her new superpowers. As she walked to school, she realized she'd forgotten to ask what she needed to do to release those powers. You know, say some secret words or give a sign or something. But she decided she'd figure it out as she went along. That day at lunch, she saw that same sad boy sitting by himself again. Let's try my magic, she said, as she wiggled her fingers at him from a distance. Nothing happened. Maybe I need to be closer, she thought. So she walked closer to him, and he looked up at her. She couldn't help but give him a friendly smile, and when she did, his face beamed with his own huge smile. Ha! Thought Amelia, I really do have magic. Can I join you for lunch? She asked. Sure, he said, smiling even bigger. The two of them laughed and talked all during lunchtime. She learned his name was Bobby. He'd lost his father earlier in the year, and he and his mother had moved here after that. He didn't know anyone and was too shy to go up to kids and talk. Well, Amelia and Bobby became good friends, and Bobby smiled a lot from then on. One day soon after that, Amelia and Bobby were at the playground when they saw Kathy bullying two younger kids by the swings. She'd read what to do about bullies, but she'd never tried any of it before because she wasn't really sure she could do it. But now, with her superpowers, she was ready. "Come on, Bobby, let's go help those kids." So they walked up to where Kathy stood over those two children, and Amelia wiggled her fingers at her and said loudly, "Kathy, stop it right now. Come on, Dodie and Lou, come with Bobby and me. You're safe with us." After the four of them had left, Amelia told the two, "If she bothers you again, just turn around and walk away. Act like you don't hear her and don't show any emotion. And if she keeps on trying to hurt you, let Mr. Crenshaw in the office know. I'll go with you if you need me to." They did just as Amelia said, and Kathy never bothered those kids again. Well, by now Amelia was feeling pretty good about her super magic powers. "How can I use them to fix up our old park?" she wondered. Wiggling her fingers didn't work. She still didn't know any magic words. "Maybe if I start working to clean it, something will occur to me." And so she did. She took trash bags to the park and started picking up trash that had been left there. Before long, a couple of her friends came by and asked what she was doing. "I'm fixing our park so we can play in it again." That sounded like a great idea to her friends, and they began to help. Soon, other kids joined them. They picked up trash, pulled weeds, and cleared out dead brush. Little by little, the park began to look better. When some of the parents saw the improvement, they decided to help. Some mowed the grass, others built picnic tables, and still others convinced the city to buy some new equipment. It was hard work, and it took many days, but they got their new park. When it was all done, the whole neighborhood had a picnic in their new park to celebrate it. After the picnic, Amelia fell exhausted into bed. She was just about asleep when the fairy godmother came back. "Oh, I'm so happy to see you," said Amelia. "I want to thank you for giving me all these super magic powers." "But I tried to tell you," said the fairy godmother. "My wand was broken. I didn't give you any." "Well, you must have given me powers," protested Amelia. "How else could I have made Bobby happy, stopped a bully, and given our neighborhood a wonderful park?" The fairy godmother just smiled. "My dear," she said, "you did that because you possess three powers that you developed yourself: kindness, bravery, and determination. With those three things, you are making a difference." And with that, Amelia fell fast asleep.
Now is the time in the service when the love that binds us together is spoken aloud. If you have a joy or a sorrow that you would like to share this morning, please type it in the chat. Alex Peach is joyful that he escaped injury, yet his car did not. Sadly, it's been considered totaled. Alex has a concern that used car prices are high, as per NPR, and shopping around proves so. Hopefully he will find the new-to-him car relatively quickly. Carol Herman would like to place a pebble of love and remembrance honoring her late first husband, Henry Herman, who passed away 10 years ago this month. And yet another with love for all our human friends who helped her through it all. Here is a pebble for those joys and sorrows we're typing in the chat now, and a final pebble for all those joys and sorrows still too tender to escape the folds of our hearts. Let us keep one another in our thoughts for the coming week.
Hi everyone, I'm Chris Wilson, and my family and I joined Human a little under a year ago. It's great to have the opportunity to talk about one of my deeply held beliefs, which is how each of us has a superpower, and generally more than one. Back in April, I spoke briefly in a service led by Reverend Dave about a religious education class series we had just completed, titled Process Theology and Plurality, which Dave led. The class looked at process theology, a philosophy originally developed by mathematician and philosopher Alfred North Whitehead that describes God as a power, a force, or a creative evolutionary idea. Think of the concept of becoming over being. And then evaluated that concept from several different perspectives over multiple class sessions. One session that really grabbed my attention was about similarities in the writings of Ralph Waldo Emerson and his thoughts on the oversoul, as well as Emerson's transparent eyeball, and the Taoist concept of chi or life force, as well as the force from the Star Wars movies. I've always been a huge sci-fi and fantasy fan. You name it, I've read it, from Star Wars to Star Trek to The Lord of the Rings. I've seen it, I've talked about it with friends and family, and this link between Emerson, such a big contributor to our own Unitarian tradition, and a totally made up but nonetheless spiritual philosophy in Star Wars really resonated with me. So let's start with Emerson, who led the Transcendentalist movement in the U.S. Transcendentalists saw divine experience inherent in the everyday, rather than believing in a distant heaven. Transcendentalists saw the physical and spiritual phenomena as part of the dynamic processes rather than discrete entities. Transcendentalism was a heady melange of direct personal experience. Emerson himself writes extensively on this in Nature. German idealism also, it was strongly influenced by Hindu texts on philosophy of the mind and spirituality. Now, in his essay on The Oversoul, published in 1841 and considered one of Emerson's greatest writings, Emerson describes the supreme critic on the errors of the past and the present, and the only prophet of that which must be is that great nature in which we rest as the earth lies in the soft arms of the atmosphere. That unity, that oversoul within which every man's particular being is contained and made one with all other, that common heart. So the oversoul really boils down into four basic principles. First, the human soul is immortal and immensely vast and beautiful. The immortality of the soul shows up again and again in both Hindu and Buddhist reincarnation, but also in some ways in Star Wars. Second, our conscious ego is slight and limited in comparison to the soul, despite the fact that we habitually mistake our ego for our true self. Third, at some level, the souls of all people are connected, though the precise manner and the degree of this connection is not really spelled out. This also shows up in Star Wars, the interconnectedness of everything, sound familiar as well, but also in the Taoist concept of qi. Fourth, the soul is created by and has an existence that is similar to God, or rather God exists in us. Again, to quote Emerson, we live in succession, in division, in parts, in particles. Meantime, within man is the soul of the whole, the wise silence, the universal beauty to which every part and particle is equally related, the eternal one. And this deep power in which we exist and whose beatitude is all accessible to us is not only self-sufficing and perfect in every hour, but the act of seeing and the thing seen, the seer and the spectacle, the subject and the object are one. We see the world piece by piece as the sun, the moon, the animal, the tree, but the whole of which these are shining parts is the soul. And another way Emerson describes how to view this is from within or from behind, a light shines through us upon things and makes us aware that we are nothing, but the light is all. That's interesting to think about. So we have a couple of things here. Everything and everyone is connected or part of a whole, and you experience this more directly in nature. So how does a person see these concepts? The idea of the transparent eyeball first appeared in Emerson's essay, Nature, published in 1836. In this essay, Emerson describes nature as the closest experience there is to experiencing the presence of God. To truly appreciate nature, one must not only look at it and admire it, but also be able to feel it taking over the senses. From Emerson's perspective, This process requires absolute solitude. A man needs to retire as much from his chamber as from society to uninhibited places like the woods, where we return to reason and faith. There, says Emerson, I feel that nothing can befall me in life, no disgrace, no calamity, leaving me my eyes, which nature cannot repair. Standing on the bare ground, my head bathed by the blithe air and uplifted into infinite spaces, all mean egotism vanishes. I become a transparent eyeball. I am nothing. I see all. The currents of the universal being circulate through me. I am part or particle of God. So that was one of Emerson's superpowers, the ability to describe how he experienced the presence of nature, divine, directly observed through a transparent eyeball, and how you can experience it too. Now, let's look at a similar concept in terms of universal connectivity, but in this case, in Eastern philosophy, where it sometimes could manifest in some pretty supernatural ways. In traditional Chinese culture, qi, sometimes spelled qi or chi, is believed to be a vital force forming part of any living entity. So, close to Emerson's divine, but a little bit different, qi translates more literally as air, or figuratively as material energy, life force, or energy flow. Qigong, or chigung, literally defined as life energy cultivation, is a system of coordinated body postures and movements, breathing and meditations used for the purposes of health, spirituality, and martial arts training. Now here's where it gets interesting. Along with many ancient and modern texts, there are a number of not too distant videos out on the web that show Qigong masters in practice, in some cases creating fire by focusing their flow of qi energy, in other cases creating a protective barrier so that sticks broken over their backs or gut punches seem to have no effect. The videos didn't really show what the person looked like after the fact, but hours later you have to presume that the practitioner is fine, maybe having some tea, whatever. Not to be outdone, in Hinduism, siddhis are material, paranormal, supernatural, or otherwise magical powers, abilities, and attainments that are the product of yogic advancement through sadhanas such as meditation and yoga. Spiritual masters were thought to actually manifest supernormal abilities such as flying through the air, walking through solid obstructions, diving into the ground. Now, where do you come up after you dive into the ground? I haven't figured that part out yet. Walking on water and so forth are achieved through changing one element such as earth into another element such as air. The individual must master kasina meditation before this is possible. Dipa Ma, a 20th century meditation teacher of some of the more modern meditation teachers including Jack Kornfield, Joseph Goldstein, and Sharon Salzberg, was said to demonstrate these abilities. I wonder if they would have seen her in action. That would have been really interesting to see. So far, between Emerson, Qigong, and Hindu siddhis, we now manifest the ability to merge with nature, create fire, fly through the air, walk through walls, and we haven't really arrived at Star Wars yet until right now. Now, everybody knows to tell a good story, you need to add in some cool stuff. In terms of plays and movies, they call these plot devices. So George Lucas, he created the concept of the Force to address character and plot development in Star Wars. But in later interviews, he at least stated that he also wanted to awaken a certain kind of spirituality in young audiences, suggesting a belief in God without actually endorsing any specific religion. Now that's interesting, and not really part of the Star Wars saga that you generally hear a lot about. Lucas states that he developed the Force as a non-denominational religious concept distilled from the essence of all religions, premised on the existence of God and distinct ideas of good and evil. Lucas said that there is a conscious choice between good and bad, and the world works better if you're on the good side. In 70s San Francisco, where Lucas lived when he wrote the drafts that became Star Wars, New Age ideas that incorporated the concept of qi and other notions of a mystical life force were in the air and pretty widely embraced. So I'm not going to go into the stories of the movies. If you want to watch the movies for Star Wars, there's a lot of them, and understand how the concept of the Force plays into the plot, please do. But I will use some of the quotes from characters from Star Wars, namely those who are practitioners of the Force, or those who are more sensitive to the Force itself, in order to describe what the Force actually is. Here goes. The Force is an energy field created by all living things. It surrounds us and penetrates us. It binds the galaxy together, says Obi-Wan Kenobi. Close your eyes, feel it. The light, it's always been there, it will guide you, says Maz Kanata. The Force is not a power you have. It's not about lifting rocks. It's the energy between all things, a tension, a balance that binds the universe together, says Luke Skywalker. You must unlearn what you have learned. You will know good from bad when you are calm, at peace, passive, says Yoda. And this quote from Yoda, and Yoda is actually pretty small, so just so that you know. Size matters not. Look at me. Judge me by my size, do you? And well, you should not. For my ally is the Force, and a powerful ally it is. Life creates it, makes it grow. Its energy surrounds us and binds us. Luminous beings are we, not this crude matter. You must feel the Force around you, here, between you, me, the tree, the rock, everywhere, yes, even between the land and the ship. The Force is described to have a light side, or the good side, and a dark side, or the bad or the evil side. Now, the book, The Magic of Myth, compares the sharp distinction between the good or the light side and the evil dark side of the Force, and relates that to Zoroastrianism, or also within our own Christian and Judaic traditions, which state that good and evil, like light and darkness, are contrary realities. The connectedness between the light and the dark side has been compared to the relationship between yin and yang in Taoism, although the balance between yin and yang really lacks the element of evil associated with the dark side. So close. It's close to the Force, but not quite there. Yes, in Star Wars, individuals who use the Force can do things like sense disturbances to the balance of life over great distances, like planets away, jump extreme distances, move or lift heavy objects without actually touching them, so telekinesis, influence others, also called the Jedi mind trick, or the bad guys who crave only power. They have the ability to shoot lightning from their fingers or choke people without touching them. That was a Darth Vader thing, if you're familiar with Darth Vader. So, now here's where it gets real. A group have actually taken these concepts from Star Wars and put them together into a religion, which they call Jediism. See if any of this sounds familiar to you. According to the TempleOfTheJediOrder.org, and this actually comes from the website itself, the Jedi believe in the Force and in the inherent worth of all life within it, in the sanctity of the human person. Jedi oppose the use of torture and cruel or unusual punishment, including the death penalty, in a society governed by laws grounded in reason and compassion, not in fear or prejudice, in a society that does not discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation or circumstances of birth, such as gender, ethnicity, and national origin, in the ethic of reciprocity, and how moral concepts are not absolute, but vary by culture, religion, and over time, in the positive influence of spiritual growth and awareness on society, in the importance of freedom of conscience and self-determination within religious, political, and other structures, in the separation of religion and government, and the freedoms of speech, association, and expression. So, we've talked about a lot. Now, as UUs, where does that leave us, and what are our superpowers? Well, UU congregations affirm and promote seven principles, which we hold as strong values and moral guides. This living tradition of wisdom and spirituality is drawn from six sources, as diverse as science, poetry, scripture, and personal experience. Our six sources are direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder, affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces which create and uphold life. Words and deeds of prophetic women and men, which challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming power of love. Third, wisdom from the world's religions, which inspires us in our ethical and spiritual life. Fourth, Jewish and Christian teachings, which call us to respond to God's love, by loving our neighbors as ourselves. 5, humanist teachings, which counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science and warn us against idolatries of the mind and spirit. And finally, spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions, which celebrate the sacred circle of life and instruct us to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature. Now, as I visualize my own part in the harmony of our UU community, I like to think of these sources as a kind of power source, maybe a superpower source, that I can channel as I live out our 7 principles, supporting justice, equity, compassion, spiritual growth, liberty, and peace. Now, what's my superpower? I have the power to get people moving, though not through telekinesis. It helps that I enjoy teaching social country dancing in my spare time. But I also like to think that through the power of thoughtful listening, through mentorship, and through my own positive encouragement and my own example, I can help my friends and family gain an impetus that helps them achieve their goals. Now, what's your superpower? Maybe it's kindness, bravery, and determination, like Amelia in our story from earlier. Maybe it's from the Buddhist concept of kshanti, defined as equanimity, forbearance, or forgiveness. Or maybe it's deep listening. Or maybe your superpower manifests as what first seems like an ordinary hug. But in reality, that hug is really a field of golden healing energy, and that within that space, there's only unconditional love. Maybe it's caring for those within our community that most need it, like everyone that actively supported our recent Family Promise families who stayed at the church for 2 weeks. Thank you, volunteers, for that. Maybe it was volunteering to support the Fulton County Remembrance Coalition, organized around the Equal Justice Initiative's Community Remembrance Project, to honor the 36 documented victims of racial terror lynching in Fulton County. You know what your superpower is. Part of our living tradition, our faith together and living it boldly, is making sure that everyone around you knows and feels your superpower as well. Embrace the power that your superpower brings to you individually, but more importantly, within our UU and non-UU community. Now go out there and be superhuman.
Many people who come to UMIN say they do so for what they get from the community. We all get, because we all give, our time, our treasure, and our talent. If you'd like to give your time or talent, try the connection tab on the menu bar on the top of the homepage at UMIN.org. But now we ask for your treasure. To support the work of UMIN, the morning's offering will now be received using the Givelify app.
We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again.
Our benediction comes from the Interfaith Benediction by Gary Kowalski. Gathered in our varied faiths, we give thanks for the blessings of world community as we share our common dream. Homes and schools where children thrive, neighborhoods that are safe and clean, a city rich in colors and cultures, an economy where no one is expendable, a beloved community where rich and poor alike have access to the opportunity for a dignified and productive life, churches, mosques, synagogues, and temples where our deepest hope is to be of service to a hurting world. Enable us as we leave this place to carry forth this prayer into the coming week, turning our thoughts toward charity, our hearts toward justice, and our hands toward the work of peace. Shalom and amen.